The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
The excitement in the NFL, NBA, NHL, and both college football and college basketball is at a fever pitch. As I've said many times before, the only place to get in on all the action is with our friends at BetOnline.ag. Create a free account on BetOnline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus. And take advantage of their Refer a Friend program, where you can give a 200% bonus to your friend up to $200. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio.
And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is Steve Austin Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. I'm sitting here at my desk at 316 Gimmick Street. My wife is about 10 feet in front of me sitting at her desk, and she is getting pissed off because I keep flubbing and fucking up all these damn opens, and she's about ready to go eat some damn sushi for her birthday meal. Honey, I ain't going to sing a happy birthday to you on the podcast. I will after I hit the stop button, but nonetheless, happy 33rd birthday. Boy, I just scored some big-ass brownie points with that motherfucker. Hey, man, I got a badass podcast for you today. Stand-up comedian, writer, actor, super talented guy. He's hilarious. Comedian Ron Funches is my guest on today's show. He came by 316 Gimmick Street. You'll hear our first conversation, how it all transpired as we got in touch with each other via an email. And I had a blast talking with this guy. He came over, and we're talking about wrestling. We're talking about comedy, life, traveling, all kinds of cool shit. And it was a great conversation. I hope you enjoy this podcast as much as I did. And the biggest reason he came over was to promote his brand new special, his comedy special on Comedy Central, January 4th, 2019, 11 Eastern, 10 Central, on Comedy Central. There, I said it. Finally, I didn't fuck it up. In my earlier opens, I kept calling it the Comedy Channel, the Comedy Channel. That's why I had to do this sumbitch about 16 times. Ron Funches, this man is funny. You got to see him. And if I give you the wrong information, you can't see him. January 4th, 2019, 11 Eastern, 10 Central, only on Comedy Central. Check this guy out. He's funny as hell. And I hope you enjoy my conversation. I'm going to keep this open very short because I don't want to go into a bunch of stories because I'm going to share those next week with Ted Fowler, 361, coming on to do my last show. Kane's coming on. Well, I'm talking to him tomorrow. He'll come on in a couple of days. And then Ted Fowler, 361, and me are going to wrap this year up. But enjoy my conversation with Ron Funches. Make sure you check out his comedy special on January 4th, 11 Eastern, 10 Central on Comedy Central.
I'm going to do this podcast.
My wife is... I need a margarita. Enjoy my conversation with Ron Funches. The excitement in the NFL, NBA, NHL, and both college football and college basketball is at a fever pitch. As I've said many times before, the only place to get in on all the action is with our friends at BetOnline.ag. Create a free account on BetOnline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus. And take advantage of their Refer a Friend program, where you can give a 200% bonus to your friend up to $200. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
This is Steve Austin, Unleashed.
That's the fucking... God damn, I got to get this shit cut off. I got Ron Funches. We're sitting here live and in living color. Well, it ain't really live and living color. It's going to be on a podcast that was downloaded later. Ron Funches, stand-up comedian, actor, writer, extraordinaire, all kinds of bullshit, super talented cat. Nice to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you.
Big-ass wrestling fan.
Yeah, man.
For real. I talked to you on the phone. It was one of the craziest days of my life. I literally done my first show. I've been touring around with Conan O'Brien. And it's different than my normal tours. My normal tours involve a regular flight and staying in a 3-star hotel at the best. And I'm in a private jet going to all these Four Seasons. And I just had finished the show, got off the jet, talked to Conan, and I get a phone call and it's Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I'm like, it's my teenage dreams come true.
Well, man, I've been sitting there talking to my producer, and he said, man, he's been trying to get me out of the wheelhouse that I've been in, man, because I talked to a lot of people from the wrestling business, and I know you have a love for indie wrestling.
Yeah.
So do I, but I never get a chance to talk to a whole lot of them because I've always been, you know, in WCW, WWF, whatever. So anyway, he started booking some of them cats, and he goes, hey, man, I'm kind of connected into the, you know, stand-up world, and I've seen your name a bunch, been listening to a bunch of your stuff. And I just kind of like, I don't know if I got into a rut or whatever. I was like, man, fuck, man. I said, yeah. So he started talking to your people.
Yeah, I mean, I've been listening to your podcast, and you were doing a run of Ted episodes.
Oh, yeah, when I was in deer season a couple years ago. Hey, when I get into, hey, man, I need a guest, if I'm not sitting here saying the ABCs are just making shit up or trying to make chicken salad out of chicken shit, I just call Ted up and say, hey, man, you got an hour in you? He goes, well, sure, man. He goes, or I ain't got shit. I said, well, we won't have shit together. And see what the fuck happens. So anyway, I was reading my emails, questions@steveaustinshow.com, and I got an email from Ron Funches. I said, man, this has got to be some bullshit, because I know Ron did email me himself, because my producer had been talking to someone who dealt with you. And because I always check my emails, I just said, man, for some reason, this feels like the real McCoy. And I said, well, fuck, I ain't even going to block my phone number when I call him. And it's funny, because when I call people, and especially folks back in Texas or that know me, because I'm pretty low key, my number pops up at Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Beverly Hills, and we're in Marina Del Rey. Shit. But Beverly Hills, they think it's a gimmick call, or it's a telemarketer, mm-hmm. or somebody wants some money or whatever. But, you know, that's just where my number pops up. And so I knew what your voice sounded like, and all of a sudden I called you up. You sounded pretty perplexed. It was like, and then maybe on your end, you're like, hey, is this a fucking rib?
Yeah. On my end, I'm pretty similar. I've been talking to my managers, my people, getting the special out. And I have a love of wrestling. You know, Ric Flair's in my special. There's like a wrestling theme to it. And so I was like, best way to, and I love your podcast. So I was like, I'd love to go on your podcast and promote it, because I think it just makes sense. And I was getting a lot of runaround with my agents and stuff, being like, okay, like, we're going to get in touch with them. And then I'd wait a couple weeks, and they'd be like, have you gotten in touch with them? And they're like, not yet. And then, or he's on vacation or a thing like that. And so then I was like, I was listening to podcasts, which I do anyway. And so you would think Ted was the guest. And then at the end, you were like, if you have questions or if you had guest requests, just email me. So I was like, fuck it, I'll do it myself. And I emailed you. And so then I didn't expect maybe an email back or something, but then I emailed you that afternoon, and then I think it was later that night, I get a phone call, and I just didn't recognize the area code, and normally I don't pick up, but I just was like, oh, I'll see who it is. I don't owe anybody any money right now, so I might as well pick up. And I picked up, and when your voice comes through, I'm just literally trying to be like, who's fucking with me right now?
Hey, this motherfucker does a good Stone Cold.
Yeah.
But I told you, you standing kind of hesitant, and I was like, man, maybe I called him at a bad time, because I don't know if you was fixing to go on stage, but you said I think you was at like an apartment, or you was way downstairs, or you might have been fixing to go on stage. And I said, man, I think this guy's blowing me off. I said, he fucking emailed me. Now he kayfabing me. I mean, well, fuck. If he don't want to do the podcast, he ain't got to. Now the motherfucker got my phone number.
Oh, no, sir. No, sir. Not at all. I'm a big, big, big fan of wrestling, a big fan of yours in particular. So more than anything, I was trying not to completely mark out and just be like, and again, it was like a greatest day. Conan is like one of my biggest comedian heroes. When I was a kid, he to me, you know, with my age group, he was my Leno, he's my Carson, my Letterman. And so I was just did my first show with him, and then I get off the phone, get off stage, and I get a phone call from you. I'm just like, I must be dead. Like, this is literally a dream. Like, it made me really happy. And my favorite part of the whole conversation, because I've repeated it to friends, was like, I didn't want to waste your time, basically. I was like, Stone Cold doesn't have time for me. He doesn't, maybe he'll do the podcast, maybe he won't. But then you genuinely seemed like you wanted to talk to me. And then I was just like, okay, I'll talk to you later. And then at the end, you were like, can I ask you one question? Are you influenced by Mitch Hedberg? And I was like, what? That's the last thing I thought. I'd be talking to Stone Cold Steve Austin about Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah, but goddamn, you know, I'm such a stand-up comedian fan. I'm such a fan of stand-up comedy, you know, and, you know, I ain't funny enough to be, you know, a stand-up guy and shit. It'd take a lot of guts to even go out there. I can be funny in a room, entertain my buddies, doing stupid shit, especially if we're getting drunk. But getting on stage is a whole different thing. So, you know, like Carlin, Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy, you know, Mitch Hedberg. And the thing about Mitch Hedberg was, man, and even like a lot of your stuff, I mean, it's just kind of, some of it's low key, some of it's pitch, it's delivery, it's cadence. And it's like, you know, a lot of people don't get Mitch Hedberg. And it's just like, I don't get it. Well, you're fucking dumb.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what it was about that guy, but I just loved him. But was he an influence on you?
Oh, a big influence, yeah. My three biggest influence comedically, stand-up or otherwise, Dave Chappelle, Mitch Hedberg, and Lucille Ball. Those were the people when I was a kid. I loved I Love Lucy. When I was a teen, I found Dave Chappelle. And then when I got a little bit older, I found Mitch Hedberg. And that was really the comedy that spoke to me, because, you know, I'm a young black man, but I don't really fall into like the Richard Pryor or the like Eddie Murphy of being like super confident and a ladies man type of guy. That's never been who I was. So I didn't relate to that. But when I saw Dave Chappelle, when I saw Mitch Hedberg with his sunglasses looking down, just telling these jokes, I was like, okay, this is the guy I get. This
right.
is, you know, this is someone I relate to.
But tell me about the Lucille Ball influence, because, you know, back in the day, you know, I'm older than you are, but, man, I Love Lucy, man, that was one of the shows that you did not miss,
mm-hmm.
along with Dick Van Dyke's show. But, I mean, man, that she was funny as hell, and it was kind of like she had great delivery, super smart, very charismatic. I actually think she was pretty,
mm-hmm.
but there was also a physical comedy with,
yeah.
With her facials
yeah.
and stuff like that. I mean, but how did that affect you? I mean, like, man, I would never expect you to, out of the three names you dropped, say Lucille Ball. And with that being said, I mean, she's one of the most talented women ever in show business.
Yeah, I think it's just when I was a kid growing up in Chicago, after the cartoons were coming on, they'd end up around 2:30, and then I Love Lucy would play, and I just kind of fell in love with that. And I grew up in the south side of Chicago, which is kind of a tough area, and my mom was a single parent, and she was always working, and so I was kind of like, you know, not saying that my mom wasn't there, but I was kind of like, you know, raised by watching Lucy, watching television, and a lot of it took me out of like the negativity that was going on in my childhood, and it was like here was this world where everybody was happy and fun and all this silly stuff was going on, and it was a hero for me then. And then when I got older and I would read about McCarthyism and how difficult it was for them to have this interracial couple on air during the 50s,
yeah.
like, and then how they pioneered the three-camera sitcom and how she greenlit Star Trek and all these things she did as an executive as well as a comedian and a model. I was like, oh, she's one of the dopest human beings ever. Like, she's amazing. So she's been a hero of mine for the longest. Like, if you go to my office, it's just a bunch of wrestling action figures and then, like, a big old portrait of Lucille Ball.
I was watching you on shit, it was you and Bert Kreischer, and you was talking about doing a podcast, I believe. And then you said, "Ah, man, I don't think I got time for it." But I was on your website. You got getting better.
Yeah, started it. Yeah.
So you're up and running.
I'm up and running. We're about 14, 15 episodes deep. It's just basically, I was just looking for, I thought a podcast was a great idea. I'm trying to get out of doing morning radio every day to get my rooms filled. And the kind of style of my comedy is a little bit unique. And I'm just trying to reach those people who enjoy it. So I wanted to make something that was that I could enjoy. And I also am kind of into like self-helpy stuff. And so I just wanted to talk to my friends and people who I think are successful about how they got successful and the things they're doing to continue to be successful. Because I think that in our culture, there's kind of like this barrier of what we think it is to be successful, and that if someone is successful, then we think they're on this other side of a fence that we can't get to. And that's not from everyone I've talked to. Everyone's come from some struggle. Everyone's come from some form of thing that they had to get over. And then they use that to become successful. And so my podcast is kind of like a guy to be like, hey, look, I'm not different than you. I'm not anything than you. I'm lucky. There's some luck. There's some things like that. But overall, like, I work hard I'm happy to tell you what I do if you're trying to do this job too. So that's pretty much what the podcast is about. It's just about getting better at all forms of life.
That's cool that you're trying to help people get better, because my podcast is just 2 days a week and nothing but pure bullshit.
Well, one's more popular than the other.
my whole thing is, because I can't stand talking about politics and religion.
Yeah.
People just want, people get their feelings hurt so easy these days. And then also, I mean, they're so divisive. So I always kind of looked at myself as when I was Stone Cold Steve Austin. Hey, man, I'm a pro wrestler. And a pro wrestler is an entertainer. So that means I'm in an entertainment business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I'm a pro wrestler. These days it's sports entertainment. My point is, you're trying to draw everybody into the arena. You're trying to draw everybody to you. You're trying to be popular. So, you know, I just can't get on one horse and say, hey, this is what I am and this is what I believe in. Now, personally, hey, man, if we want to stop the microphones, well, we can talk about it. But as that person, dude, I don't want to talk about religion or politics, because I don't want to divide nobody. Because all of a sudden, if I jump on this horse and just expound my beliefs and this is what you got to believe too, I'm going to say, fuck you.
Yeah.
So I just stay away from that shit. Are you with that?
I'm pretty much similar. Like, I think that's what having class is, you know? Like, I don't need to, I can believe a certain thing and you don't have to believe that, and we can still be friends. And that's fine. I think that comes from the fact that I moved around a lot. You know, I grew up in Chicago, but I also lived in Oregon. I live here in Los Angeles, and going to a lot of those places, I met a lot of different types of people, and I met a lot of Republicans, conservatives, Democrats, independents, and you know, everybody's fucked up in their own way. Everybody's right in some ways, you know? And so it was very early in my comedy where I was like, I don't like talking about politics. I don't like talking about religion. Similar thing. I don't like dividing people. And also I like comedy that is there to make you happy, to escape from the shittiness of everyday life. I don't need to like have you come out at night and then being like, hey, you remember how shitty today was? Like that's me.
Yeah,
fun.
Because a lot of people, that's their everyday life. And me going back to, man, when that glass broke and I got a chance to go out and do my thing for 15 to 30 minutes, whatever that night was, my deal was, man, I'm just trying to take everybody's mind off this shitty day they had, you know?
And yeah.
Hey, man, like your gig or being at a comedy gig, it's going to last for an hour, 2 hours, however long it is. Like, hey, man, this is entertainment, so you can forget everything else and just fucking laugh or don't laugh and just sit there. But yeah, we're not going to dwell upon anything. We're just going to fuck around.
Yeah. And I just want to bring people in. Like you said, to me, I can't get up stage and be like, oh, this guy sucks. And like, if you're a Republican, you're shitty. Cause like, I know a lot of people who are dope, who are of all, you can be, you know, Republican or Democrat or obese or anorexic, that those are just little labels, you know? Like, I care about people. I care about who you are when I talk to you and when I look you in the eyes. That's when I can judge someone. Like, I don't care about who you vote for. Like, I don't care about what you believe religious-wise. I just want us to get along. Or if you're trying to harm me, I want to knock you the fuck out. Either way.
The violent side of my and the Chicago background coming through.
Yeah.
Damn, I thought I was going to get the chill guy from Portland. But, you know, the one dude, just to drop one more name, that Jim Jeffries.
Yeah.
Like, dude, he's anti-Christ. But, I mean, anti-religion or whatever. But I can listen to that guy and laugh my ass off, because that's just his gig.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When you're good at what you do, it just shows no matter what. There's people who are really good at political comedy. And when I watch them, I learn things and I'm laugh. I'm not good at it, so I'm not going to go do it.
Well,
I don't.
There ain't nothing worse than watch someone stumble fuck around a bunch of stuff and it just turns awkward and it's like, man, dude, you need to get a new act.
Yeah. Yeah, stick to what you're good at is what I believe in, and I'm good.
But I will say, when I do listen to Jim Jeffries, I do have my rosary beads on. Hey, man, when did you know that you, hey, man, I'm kind of funny, and start using that as a tool? I don't know whether it was a defense mechanism back in the day.
Yeah, for sure.
Were you shy? And this
definitely
way to get people
shy.
To be cool with you?
Yeah. Again, you know, being in Chicago and being in, because I grew up in the South Side, grew up in the city, and it's tough, and I... my mom put us in like in a Catholic school, and so we, you know, we're a little more tender people, and in order to not get beat up and you know and stuff, I had to learn to diffuse situations, and I learned from my mom, like she would punish us and then I could crack these jokes and she would forget about punishing us, and I was like, oh, okay, there's a power to this. But for a long time, I didn't think about it. And then I was a teenager, 13, 14, going to like a Thanksgiving dinner. And I realized that I like was making the entire family laugh. And I was like, I'm funny. And I didn't know the type of funny because I'd never been a class clown. I'm not loud or anything like that. But I'm a good shit talker. I'm a good at making fun of the class clown. Like that's my style. And so it took me a while. And it took me seeing people like Mitch Hedberg and Tig Notaro and quieter comedians to be like, oh, okay, I don't have to be like loud and boisterous or deaf comedy jam style. I can be quiet and still be funny.
How do you go about writing or creating new material? And if you do, or when you do, how long will you cycle that?
Basically, I was related to, I think there's two types of writers in comedy. There's like hunters or fishers. Like there's people who are out there stalking for jokes every day and they're like in their notebook every day. I'm more of a fisher where like I wait for something to come to me. I wait for something to affect me. If I'm angry about something or if I feel embarrassed about something or sad about something, if it affects me emotionally, I go, oh, fuck. That's something I need to write about. And so then I just have to catch that fish and write it down. And then it's just a process of figuring out where the joke is. So I just kind of go up there and I talk in my rhythm and I stay in that. And then when people laugh, I go, okay, that's where the joke is.
But is it trial and error? I mean, will you go out there and just throw some stuff out there? If maybe you've halfway finessed it. And it almost takes me back. Let's go back to wrestling because I know you love wrestling. Savage Steamboat from WrestleMania 3. That's one of all time classics. Mm-hmm. I know you remember the match.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, back in the old days, you know, we used to call shit in the ring and you're working the crowd. And based on, you know, what that crowd does, you call something else to keep moving them in the direction you want to move.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like that. But they've been working on that match for, you know, a month or two because they'd been working, you know, all around the United States. It's a big loop, right?
Yeah.
And so by the time they got there, you know, that was what they had. And they knew that it would work.
Yes.
And it's, so.
That's very, very similar. That's very similar to what I do is you have an idea and you hone that idea and I take it to little colleges or little clubs. And then by the time that I'm get ready to go do a tour where I'm doing like small theaters or, then I put it all together and then hopefully just keep tightening it up and stay in the moment when you're performing on stage. So if you want to add new things or see where it takes you, which I assume is like the calling in the ring part of it. And then. Basically, when I'm bored of it, when I'm on stage killing and I'm bored, I go, okay, it's time to record this and move along.
Do you have any kind of set list on the stage floor? Because a lot of times, you know, if you go to a concert, man, they got their songs written down in order. Or even a better example of that was when I went to the Ozfest one year, I was good friends with Zach Wilde, who was their lead guitarist. And so, you know, I'm sitting there stage left, and there's a big-ass teleprompter. You know, Ozzy, man, I mean, he's been fucked up for a long time. I say that with love. But, you know, he's reading the damn lyrics to his songs that he'd been singing for 30 years. So he got to have the lyrics in front of him. Have you done it so long? It is just like things flow together, and you want them in a certain order, or you can chop them up and mentally... And just throw it out there as much as you want, depending on what the crowd's giving you.
It depends on the situation. Sometimes if I'm in a place...
Hey, that was a fucked up question I kind of stumbled on, but Ron was fucking around with his phone.
You know, to tell people.
Hey, this is award-winning podcast.
I thought that we covered it really well. Oh,
we were doing good, but you should have given me the signals. I got to call you out. So anyway, do you write shit down? How do you fucking go about that, man?
You're an honest man. Basically, it depends on the job. If it's a bigger gig, I try to have no notes out there because I'm trying to entertain. I consider it like if I had a script while I was performing a movie, you know? But if I'm just at the Comedy Store, if I'm just hanging out, trying to come up with new material, then I usually have a list. I'll try to start with something I know that works, and then I'll go into new things that I'm unsure about, and then wrap back into something that works so that people feel like they got their money's worth. But I used to keep them on my phone, and then I found out that just the visual of like looking at your phone for notes makes you look like you don't give a fuck about being there.
Right.
And so I keep a little like one page note, and I'll just put it on the stool. But that's like if I'm just trying new things. Other than that, then I just try to write on stage. I just work things out. I'll have an idea. I'll just record it. I record every one of my sets, and then I usually send it to my girlfriend, who will listen to it. And then if she likes it, then I'll listen to it. And then, but for the most part, I just try to be in the moment. That's a big thing I've been learning from. I've been watching a lot of documentaries, watching a documentary about Gary Shandling. And I think I had gotten to a thing where I was just really trying to, like, I gotta kill. I gotta be really good. So I'm only gonna do the things I know that work. And then you could just feel it. You feel like you're some type of, like, Chuck E. Cheese robot just performing 5 times a day. And once I stopped doing that, and I kept telling myself, like, just talk. Just go out there and talk to people. You'll be funny. And that's really been helping.
Where's that confidence level at? Because, I mean, there's got to be times when you go out there and maybe it's that same shtick, that same routine that you've been doing, and that somebody's been killing it every damn night, but all of a sudden you roll into whatever, some town, and it's like fucking just sitting there on their hands. It's like... Yeah, because we've been there in the ring where all of a sudden, you know, hey, man, this match has been crushing it for a pretty good while. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, these motherfuckers don't care. What do you do when that happens?
You call it out, you know? You have to just be in the moment of it, and you say, hey, what is this, guys? What can I do? What am I doing wrong? And what's going on here? I just try to be honest. And I tell them, like, yeah. I'm like, hey, these jokes work. I know they work. I know they're good. And sometimes you're just, you know that you're not for every audience. And I try to be more particular about shows I choose to go on. But sometimes my friends will, I did a show where a friend asked me to come open for her, and she had someone else drop out. And I was like, I don't think we have the same audience, but I'll go. And I just ate shit for 15 minutes. And I, in first five, I'm like, okay, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. The next five, I'm like, here comes some of my best stuff. So let me see. And when they didn't respond, I just told them. I was like, look, you're wrong. I know this works. I know I'm good. I go, I'm here as a favor. I'm not even.
I'm doing the motherfucking favor. It don't matter if y'all laugh or not. I would prefer that you did for my ego and my confidence, but if not, fuck you.
Yeah, you're just not for me. I know I'm dope. I'll see you later.
Who is your basic, who's your core demographic?
Oh, I'm trying to figure that out. but from what I've been finding, it's, if I were to describe my audience, is usually, I always say that they're pink-haired ladies of any age. Like, you can see I see pink-haired 60-year-olds at my audience, pink-haired 20-year-old ladies at my audience. I think smarter, my audience is a little smarter, a little kinder. That's what the people at the clubs usually tell me, is that my audience is good tippers, that they're smarter, and that they're usually very, very nice. Which sometimes is difficult to find in comedy, because people are usually like, they think it's going to be a negative thing. They think you're going to, like, if you heckle, that I'm going to be like, hey, I don't come and slap the dicks out of your, you know.
And that was Triple H's standard line to someone. If they, hey, I don't slap a dick out of your mouth while you're doing your job, so leave me alone while I'm doing mine. When someone was heckling him in the ring.
Yeah. That makes me happy. That makes me happy to know that. But for the most part, I just try, I let people know I'm from. I'm like, look, you might have wanted to Google me because I'm not the guy to just show up and you just think you're going to get some, like, you know, Eddie Murphy or whatever. And these are all people I respect, but yeah. What I do is unique. I chose my style and my goal instead of to be other, it's good, be like other comedians, which is to be the best. You can't out me.
Yeah.
And so that's my plan. And if you're into me, then you're going to love it. And if you're not, then I'll catch you later.
Hey, man, how's life on the road these days? Because, I mean, you're on fire right now. You got your special coming out, Giggle Fit. We were talking about that in a minute, but you've been busy doing TV work. You got your podcast going on. You're just busy as hell. But what were the formative years like? Because you kind of mentioned the parallel with pro wrestling, you know, because you said you started with Conan. And all of a sudden, you know, you're flying private and all that stuff. And, man, back in the day, you know, we got 5, 6, 7 guys in a car, you know, and a bunch of them in a room because, shit, you know, time's kind of slim. So how was it like back in the day versus where you're at now?
Oh, I mean, it's night and day.
People love your voice. You're doing a lot of voiceovers.
Yeah, doing a lot of voiceovers, a lot of cartoons, and that's been really good. But, you know, I started straight stand-up, and then when I started, I'd already had a 2-year-old son who had just gotten diagnosed with autism, and it was like, it was a big choice. It was like, I remember telling my mom that I thought this was going to be my career, and her response was like, look, like, if you're going to do it, it's your job. You better do it because you have a kid and you don't have time to waste. And so for me, it was a lot of focus. And a lot of times I was lucky because I had my son. So it means I wasn't partying. I wasn't out there trying to, and I was married at the time. So I wasn't out there trying to sleep with ladies. I was just going on stage as much as possible. My first gigs were like in Salem, Oregon at this Chinese restaurant called Lucky Fortune, just eating shit in front of 20 people who don't matter, you know, and traveling around the Northwest, going to like any little podunk town in Washington, Milton, Washington, Eastern Washington, West Washington, anywhere that would have me just so that I could get better. So I could get these reps in because I knew that I was naturally, which is one thing I learned from when I went to wrestling school for 3 weeks. I go like, okay, you are naturally good at comedy. You are not naturally good at wrestling. So. I just was like, okay, you just need to get more and more experience. So I went around in my friend's mom's van, and we would just travel with a shitty headliner who was trying to sleep with all the bartenders in every club we'd go to. And that was my first 5 years, was just going around anywhere that would have me and trying at the same time to make enough money through like side jobs. I worked at like a tax services place holding the sign and stuff, just whatever I could to keep the lights on and keep my son fed until comedy would pay.
I've heard you talk about that gig. Was that like Liberty or whatever it was?
Yeah, Liberty Tax.
Man,
yeah.
So many people get pretty creative with that sign. I'm like, man, because I can't flip a sign like that.
Yeah, I couldn't either. I just had a groove with it. I would treat it like a woman.
That's I'd be driving by. If you had a sign, I was like, man, that motherfucker real basic with that sign.
With me, you'd be like, that guy's trying to fuck that sign.
Was there ever... Because I saw, you know, on your Instagram account, you got pictures with Jerry Briscoe and a lot of, you know, really heavy hitters. And, of course, Ric Flair was kind of a guy that I looked up to, and I tried to emulate his style. Mm-hmm. But there were many guys like Gorgeous Gary Young and Billy Joe Travis and Bronco Lubitsch and Skandar Akbar that mentored me and helped me, you know, learn my way and teach me psychology. Was there anybody that helped mentor you or took you aside and like, hey, man, you got this. You're good. Mm-hmm. But what about with some constructive criticism?
Mm-hmm. A lot of people. That's what's really great about the comedy community in some ways is that there is like competitiveness and there is like jealousy and things like that. But for the most part, it's kind of the thing where you're like, you smell your own, you know, you're like, you got it. You might be broke. You might not have a place to stay, but man, you're a comedian. I see it. So just hold on. And I heard that a lot from people. But as far as like mentorship, I say a lot from like a gentleman named Nick Kroll, John Mulaney. They gave me like my first jobs, like, John Mulaney took me out on the road nationally for the first time. I had some people who would take me out in the Northwest where I was living, but he was the first guy who was like, I will, he's like, oh yeah, I'll pay for you and I'll fly you to New York to come perform. And that really helped me a lot and showed me a lot. And, Conan, for sure, him taking me out on the road and helping me. And a lot of times putting me on his show, even when, you know, when I didn't have anything to promote, like, you know, which is, I'm sure as you know, is usually impossible. Like, you know,
yeah,
you
have why is he here?
Yeah. And that's how every other show, you know, has treated me, is that like, okay, is he on something? And Conan was just like, he's really funny, so let's just book him.
To that first time when you was on Conan, because I saw that. And so, like, if that was your first national or whatever, worldwide, whatever it is, mm-hmm. television exposure, what were the nerves like for you for that? I mean, do you have no nerves, or are you just like, hey, man, I'm going to go crush it?
Oh, that's really really, really nervous. I was very nervous because it was a big dream of mine, but I had some really good advice. I had my friends with me. My ex-wife was there with me at the time, and my best friend who's still around. he was there, and he was really helpful as far as, like, they had, like, all these video games in the dressing room, and he was like, let's just play video games and relax. But the best advice I got that really helped me out was, like, someone told me, like, yeah, I know this is your dream to be here, but don't think about that. Don't be happy to be here. When you go on stage, think about all the people who told you you would never be here, and go out there and show them why they were wrong. And that really kind of, like, lit a fire under me.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
It's me, Shaq, the general of Podcast One Sportsnet, your stop for the best sports podcasts. We've got it all in one place, from Steve Austin to Jim Harbaugh, Dan Patrick, the official Lakers podcast, and more. Podcast One Sportsnet, where it's all going down. So whatever sport you're watching, or interviews you want to hear, or if you just want to laugh here, you know what off with my show. It's all happening here. Download the Podcast One app and click on Podcast One Sportsnet in the bottom right corner. I'm the general, and I'm ordering you to give it a try. You'll thank me later. And don't forget to listen to The Big Podcast with Shaq every Monday.
Steve Austin. Unleash.
How much do you like being on the road? Because somebody just sent me an email and said, hey, Steve, we've heard all your stories. You know, I always relay, you know, or relate to my stories as I'm telling or mm-hmm. asking a guest,
yeah.
a few who travels a lot. So I throw out my two cents. So to the person who always says, I always tell my own stories, fuck you. It's my podcast.
Exactly.
So anyway,
being free content.
Yeah, fuck. Yeah, I ain't charging nothing for this thing. I don't even listen to this podcast. You just. I'm shooting with you.
I listen to mine on a case. I'm an egomaniac.
Do you listen to yours and think, man, I sound fucked up?
I listen to myself and I either go, oh, you were kind of stoned, or you were rambling, or I find one word that I said a lot that day and I go, like, Jesus Christ, is that your word of the day? Like,
my usual one is dude.
Mm.
I was like, how many times did you say dude? There's got to be a penalty.
Yeah.
A 15 yarder.
Mine has been man recently, but I'm trying to cut it out.
Dude, man, it's all the same thing. Yeah. So anyway, dude, man, you like being on the road?
I love being on the road. I love being on the road, and I hate being on the road.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing. I hate it when I'm home, and then 5-6 days in, I want to be home, you know?
When you get home, it's kind of like, God damn, I'm ready to get back on the road.
When I get home, I learn, like, I'm like, shit, I'm in the way, you know? The house was clean when I got here, and then 30 minutes after I get here, it looks like shit. What's going on? And I'm like, oh, I'm the issue here. The house runs like clockwork when I'm not here. If I'm just out on the road bringing stuff home, it works well. But, you know, things change. My son's 15 now, so there's part of me that's like, I want to spend these last, you know, few years before he doesn't want to hang out with me. I want to be home more for that. And so I've been trying to do more acting and keep me home that way. And then just trying to have a real relationship. You know, I have a girlfriend that I actually really, really enjoy right now, which has been rare for me. Like, I find myself more being like, oh, you just kind of like tolerate people around you. You're like, oh, they're chill, so I'm into them. And this, she's not very chill, but she makes my life better. And she, like, she's the only one, like, I was used to these women that hang out with me and we'd have sex together and then I'm making them an omelet and then they're going off. And then she was the first one who was like, you work hard. Let me make you breakfast. And I was like, holy shit.
There is a God. Hey, do you like the movie work as much as stand-up? Because, man, a lot of the people that I've seen, I mean, the stand-up is, they'll quit anything. Or if they can only hold on to one thing, they'd keep the stand-up. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that something you just got to do?
Stand-up
Or if someone just gave you a sweet-ass acting gig, you say, fuck stand-up.
No, I never say fuck stand-up.
Right.
Just did. Yeah, sometimes I do say fuck stand-up.
What if you're a shitty crowd?
Yeah, like, I'm trying to entertain you, shitbags.
I could have been in that gang in Chicago. Because that's a long-term gig.
Yeah. But for the most part, the barrier to performing stand-up, to getting that immediate reaction, to get that instant gratification, there's nothing that can beat it. I can go do a movie. I did a movie last year, won't be out till next year. So it's like, I don't know if it's good. I won't even remember. That money's already gone. So it's like, I love it. I love acting. It's like, to me, stand-up was my first child. And then acting was like, oh, I have a sec. Oh, I can love another kid just as much as my first kid. But I'm never going to throw away this kid because then I am relying on someone approving me. I'm relying on someone casting me in order to work. And as long as I have my stand up and my audience and my podcast and things like that, I can always be like, oh, fuck you. This doesn't
but
work.
You know what? That's also, I mean, you could do, what are you, 35, 38,
35?
So, I mean, you could do, barring any kind of accident, I mean, shit, you lose your vocal cords or something, you could do comedy for another 30 years, like pro wrestling, pro football, pro baseball. It'll last for a certain amount of time before you ain't got that skill set no more. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as you keep improving or just stay the same, because a lot of people just start falling off at a certain age and their shit ain't good no more.
Yeah.
But you can do this for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Do you like memorizing stuff? Because that was one thing that drove me away from acting. Mm-hmm. I can't remember shit. I've been hitting the head with so many steel chairs. Fuck it. Yeah, I'd be like, line.
I don't love it. I am pretty good at it. I have a pretty good memory. And but I'm the best. My best work is when, like, I got the script, I can memorize the script, and then they let me play. And they let me use these in my words. That's when I can really... When I watch back and I go, oh, you're actually pretty good. When I'm just reciting lines, I think it shows. So I think the best part is, I mean, I think that with any actor is like they are usually playing some type of version of themselves heightened up, like any wrestler, you know, the best wrestlers are themselves heightened up to 11, you know.
And that's, but just on what you just said, man, when to all those people out there and then in the WWE getting those written scripts, do just what Ron said and make that the way you would say it. Because sometimes when I'm watching, it's painful that they're trying to recite this promo word for word because that's what they gave them. And I think I got to live and die by that. But, you know, it's all about the performance. And did you get that point across by putting some salt and pepper and mustard? And, you know, exclamation points, pauses, sarcasm, whatever it is. You got to put you in that promo and make it work for you because it is you. They're just trying to give you some ideas. But so many people are married to that. I mean, it's just like, this is what we got to say. I'll shut the fuck up. I didn't mean to segue into wrestling.
No, I love it.
What you just said goes right to one of my big issues with the wrestling system these days. And all of a sudden, I got to be careful what I say because motherfuckers take me out of context. A couple of months ago, they said I swore off alcohol forever and started smoking medicinal marijuana. Shit, I just going on a fucking tirade about a goddamn diet. And all of a sudden, it made worldwide headlines. Fuck, Ron, being a global icon and a national treasure is a lot tougher than I thought it was going to be.
Stone cold hemp off.
Let's take a quick segue and talk about Giggle Fit, how it came to be. I saw a couple of trailers. I wish I could have seen the whole thing.
Oh, I'll send it to you.
It comes out on January 4th, 2019. So what's it all about? Is it an hour special? Or what you got?
My first hour special. I've done like a half hour for Comedy Central before. People may have seen some of like the 15 or 5 minutes specials I've done. This is my first full hour special. And I just wanted it to be basically an introduction of my type of comedy, who I am as a person, and just show you what I'm trying to present. So I'm showing you the wrestling part. I have the Ric Flair intro. I come out in a little fun Ric Flair robe. And then the rest of it's kind of just me in a suit doing classic, what I consider a classic style of comedy. It's shot by Bobcat Goldthwait, who you might be aware of. Yeah, he directed it. Shot it in Seattle, and I've watched it 3 or 4 times now, and I'm a pretty big critic of myself, and it's the thing I'm most proud that I've ever done. I'm very happy about it. I'm very excited about it, and now the biggest deal has been trying to get people to watch it, because it's not on Netflix. It's not streaming. It's something you have to go watch.
And that's why I had to bring your ass to my house.
Exactly.
I gotta go where? No, man, I'm looking forward to seeing it. So you are happy with it?
Oh, I'm very, very happy with it.
Dude, you look like $1 million bucks. Now you got a dark blue suit on, or at least on the part I saw. I said, damn, the dude looks all debonair.
Yeah.
And you kind of went through a transformation. I know 1 million motherfuckers done asked you, how'd you lose all the weight or whatever? I mean, how did you drop all that weight, dude? Did you go keto? Did you go low carb? Did you start running like a motherfucker? What?
I was so far gone that it wasn't too much of a thing to change. Like, I had to stop eating Philly cheesesteaks twice a day. Like, and now I had to stop drinking 6 packs of soda a day, you know? Now I don't drink any soda. I just learned how to cut these things off. Basically, you know, if I'm going to be very honest, it was like, I was young, I was poor, I was an early father, I was in a bad marriage, like I didn't really care about myself. I didn't think I would be successful. It took me getting on like a TV show and then being like, oh shit, I did this, I don't even know what I'm doing. If I can figure out what I'm doing, I can do much more than this, so I might want to fucking live. So... And so I got a trainer through my show, the guy who created my show, Bill Lawrence, who created Scrubs and a couple other shows that people like. And he introduced me to a trainer. He paid for my trainer for the first year, and I've just been sticking with him ever since. And basically my diet is a lot of, you know, I listen to you a lot, and it's similar. Just a lot of chicken breast, a lot of...
So you swore off alcohol for the rest of your life, too?
I'm allergic. I'm allergic to alcohol.
Are you?
Yeah, I found out when I was 18. By trying to drink, and I couldn't drink, so yeah, no. I'll smoke all the
pot. I gotta have a reaction to it too, but it's, I wouldn't say I'm allergic to it. Makes me do some stupid shit.
Yeah, no, we're good buddy comedy. You don't smoke, I don't drink.
So you smoke a little bit?
Oh yeah.
Tell me about that.
I love it.
When did
it.
That start? Southside, Oregon?
Oregon.
Yeah, good shit. Yeah. You might get your ass whipped in Chicago trying to buy them in Oregon. Here, brother.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, a bunch of hippies.
But that gang of blackbirds scared me.
Okay.
You ain't going to get these muffins.
Nice.
So what kind of stuff do you like? Do you like an indica or sativa?
I like a sativa in the day. I like an indica at night.
Yeah.
I like to go to sleep. I just try to make sure my biggest goal has been just use it as a treat, as a thing at night, like, you know, to go to bed and not be high all day. And I can't act if I'm high all the time. So
are you high now?
No, I've been sober all day.
I'm fucking with you. A couple of years ago, I was sitting here. It's football season. It's kind of a dreary, rainy day here in L.A. The Phoenix Cardinals, Arizona Cardinals, whatever the name is, they're playing football. Mm-hmm. I looked at my wife. All these damn marijuana plants start sprouting up around here. I said, well, fuck it, man. I said, I've been beat to shit. So I'm going to fuck everybody talking about getting some relief. I told my wife, I said, man, I'm going to go down to one of them little gimmicks over there and get my marijuana license. This before you had to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
They just walk in, right, mm-hmm. here in Cali. So I went over and did it, man, and I'd done my research. The only things I knew that OG Kush and some other one. And then when I walked into the gimmick shop, man, because my wife didn't have a certificate, she had to wait out in the car. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, I go in this paraphernalia shop, and dude, I did a lot of shit on the road, but smoking dope just wasn't one of them, mm-hmm. you know. But I can tell you about some alcohol and a few other things. So I walk in there, man. They got all this shit, gummies, edibles, tinctures, and they got all the damn different buds, and they, you know, weigh it for you, put a little pill bottle in it. It ain't back in the day, you know, when I had a couple friends, you know, they'd get a bag of weed, like a quarter ounce, right? That's the way it was. Fuck, I didn't know what I was doing.
Stems and seeds.
I got me my grinder.
Yeah.
I got a one-hitter. Come back, man. I hit that OG Kush, boy. Like a motherfucker. I waited about 10 minutes. Fill in shit. Hit it again. Nothing. 15 minutes later, hit one more time. Well, about 45 minutes later, we should watch that fucking football game. My wife looks over me and she goes, "You are stoned." And I can remember the football game, Ron, but I mean, it's like happening out of sequence. So I just said, fuck that. It just ain't for me.
Yeah, my mom is a recent... she started smoking. She had breast cancer a couple years ago and went through a lot of the chemo and treatment for that and had some pain and some knee pain as well. And I was trying to get her to smoke a little bit because I thought it would help her. And she refused for a long time. But now she does. But her biggest thing is that she goes, like, just give me the weed that you find in your room that you didn't know you had a month ago. I need it to be old. I need it to be not as strong. That's what she can't handle, the strength of the weed anymore. And I'm starting to feel that way too. I just think it's something as you get older. But I think it's for me, and the type of anxiety that sometimes I have, especially being on the road and doing these shows where sometimes I get done at like 1 a.m. and then I have to go do radio at like 7 a.m. Like, if I don't have something to help me go to sleep, like, then I'm going to be a wreck, and I don't want to be up. It seems like it's either that or I'm going to be up chasing ladies trying to have sex. So, you know,
does it help you write material? Does it make you more creative, or you would prefer to write straight?
It depends on the time. I like to be on stage. I perform the best sober. But as far as like my writing and being creative, I love, to me, it's nothing more fun than being up at 2 a.m., being a little stoned and just giggling with my friends and coming up with the dumbest shit and then editing it to get when I'm sober.
So, right.
I just think it can be a great tool that I try not to over rely on, because it can either be a tool or it can be a crutch.
Man, when I try to smoke that shit out there in the backseat, the few times, man, there's like a Hall of Fame Motel 6 in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and like everybody was smoking dope. Like, this is one of the things where you just have to do because of the cats involved. And so, man, about whenever that shit hit, I was like, I'd say something, and then I'd be like, man, did that sound stupid? That's what the shit does to me.
Yeah, so no, yeah, I think it might not be for you. Because I've heard that from people, that's how they respond, where they're just, the whole time, they're like, I'm being dumb. But to me, like, I care, and I know a lot of people tell me when they meet me, they're like, oh, you're such a calm, relaxing guy.
I'm high.
Yeah, exactly.
No, fuck with you.
If not, I have a lot of anxiety. I have a lot of social anxiety. I don't like going to parties. I don't like being in, if I'm not on stage, I don't like being in social situations. So I find myself much more likely to like relax at something where I have to like network in front of a bunch of fucking suits if I'm a little bit stoned. I don't think instead of being like, oh, did I say something stupid? I'm just like, oh, I don't care.
Right.
Yeah.
What about your podcast? I mean, if you have, you know, people coming over, and does that bother you? I mean, like, most times it's just you sitting there with one other person, you're doing your podcast. Does anybody ever show up at your house with a posse?
One time. Yeah, a rapper. Which makes sense. I was like, yeah, okay. Yeah, rappers have posses. This makes sense. But for the most part, people show up on the lawn. I just hate, you know, if someone brings like a manager or agent, and you're just like, well, we're just doing a fucking podcast. Chill
that
out.
That throws me off, man. I had a dude on a couple years ago, man. He had two of his lawyers and his manager and somebody else. I was like, I'm kind of...
Yeah,
know,
who am I talking to?
Yeah, I mean, well fuck. Don't answer that question. Kind of just sucks the life out of a room. A couple dudes showed up with a camera, and I was like, man, fuck. You know, this audio, you got no fucking cameras in here. So do you enjoy doing your podcast?
Yeah, I really do.
What kind of prep do you do that? Because it doesn't look like you got any notes, and you're just sitting there, and you're just kind of freelancing. Are you good at that? I mean, obviously you are, because it's very successful, and I've enjoyed the ones I watched.
The best part about it for me is I'm usually just interviewing people I've already been friends with for years. So I don't have to do much research. I already know them. I usually, in my podcast, we don't try to do like a normal, like, tell me where you're from or how'd you get started or anything like that. It's just like, it's very free flowing and just about what's going on in your life at the time. I try to do a little research, you know, I Wikipedia it or whatever I need to. And I keep a little notes throughout the week as far as like what I'm going to talk about in my pre-show, you know. But for the most part, it's really easy. I get to do it at my house. I get to wear my PJs if I want to. And it just was a part of me where I wanted to, I felt like I had been a lot of potential. People have been like, oh, he's pretty good, pretty good. He's been in this or that. But I didn't feel like I had produced anything. And so this was one thing where I was like, I want to make some content. I want to have, if people like me, I want them to be able to find things from me. And so, and especially with, again, the hour special, when I realized that I wasn't going to have like the big like Netflix distribution, I was like, oh, I need to get the word out my way. And this is the best way for me, is to do a podcast. So even after the special, we'll just keep that building, you know. And it's just, it's fun. It's really fun to sit and talk with my friends who often are too busy and too successful to. The only way I could have an hour conversation with them is if I book them for a podcast, you know?
Dude, what are you recording on? Because you roll over here into my house, you go, man, you got a basic ass setup. yours sounds really good. When you said producing content, that took me back to your special coming up on January 4th, Giggle Fit. As far as producer or director, you said Bobcat Goldthwait directed or produced it?
Directed.
Okay, here's my question. You're an outstanding comedian. So what do you mean he directed it? Like, and because, you know, he was kind of that off the wall comedian.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think, how does this dude that does his type of comedy direct you?
Basically, he came out and watched a few of my sets, and off of the sets, he thought of a theme. And in particular, the way he put it was that when he saw my comedy, he thought of it as like a dark rainbow, as like some of these like darker theme sometimes, but always done in this like light, playful manner. So he was just like, let's play with a lot of lights, a lot of colors. And when you see, because the Neptune Theater where I recorded, there's a lot of people who have recorded specials there, but it looks completely different. Like, from, if you look at mine, you wouldn't even know where I recorded it, because right. of the way that he messed with the lighting and the colors. And then he was just really good with the intro as shooting and directing that. So that's pretty much it. And then he just gave me great advice as far as, he reminded me that we were taping it, because in my head, I'm like, I gotta nail it. I have to go out there and do 60 minutes perfect. And then right before I went out, he was like, this is taped. So if you fuck up, just start over. And I was like, oh, yeah. And that really, like, that made all the difference for me.
Did you have to do that?
Once. And that's when I realized how important it was to me, because I was like, oh, I've been doing these jokes for the past 2 years. And now I'm stumbling over them because this was like, oh, you're nervous. You're excited. And it took me, and once I stopped, I was like, let me try it again. Just broke all the tension, and they laughed more the second time.
Right, because they were in on it. They saw the process.
Yeah.
It's funny, because I know you're a huge wrestling fan, going back to the day. There used to be a period of time where, because the business was such a bad spot, they would film, you know, Monday Night Raw. They'd do a live television taping, and then right after that, they'd film next week's episode after that, so that one would go to post. So if Scott Hall, a.k.a. Razor Ramon, you messed up something or botched it, he just go like that, hold up his two fingers, take two, and there he goes to do it again. Because he knew that he was going to take it to post and sweeten it up. So he didn't give a fuck. He'd just say, take two, and then he'd go through shit. And I always got a kick out of that, because and a whole lot of guys have that kind of balls just in a live TV or TV tape, and just to throw up a two and go for it. But it become the razor spot.
Yeah, and it probably made the crowd laugh, and everybody was in on it. It makes it fun. I have questions for you.
Oh, I was going to ask you about wrestling. I know you can't stay here all day. Ask me some questions, because I got answers.
Okay.
You're one of my last podcasts of the year.
Oh, cool.
Let's go out with a bang.
Yeah. I guess less of a question, more of a retrospective of like, there's a reason, like, I like you and I like your story as a wrestler, because it, to me, it's very similar in comedy of like, the amount of growth that you had to go through as far as coming from, I mean, I'm quite sure I don't know your whole career, but I was, you know, watching you when you were stunning Steve and all the things you were doing, and you could see the skill set, and you could see that you're a sound wrestler and great at your job, and then you have to go through this whole thing to become who you are and become Stone Cold Steve Austin, and but all the shit that you had to go through to get there is not fake. It's really real, and it's really how you feel. That's so interesting to me. I know this is not a question at all, but it is very interesting to me. Do you think that's something that can happen in this day and era? Because there's not territories to go to. There's not, like, if they don't think that you're a fit in, because you're like, hey, you're fired. And you're like, oh, fuck you. I'm going to ECW.
Right.
And then I'm going to WWF. And currently, there isn't a thing for that. And to me, that's like the... one of the things I hate most about wrestling right now, which I'm a big fan, I love wrestling, but the issues I have are like when I see people that I do enjoy, like maybe like a Rusev or I'll just say Rusev, and then I'm like, oh, there's just so much more that that person could do if they could just be like, fuck it, I'm leaving, I'm going to WCW. And the fact that that doesn't exist to me is one of the biggest issues with wrestling. I want to know if that's something that you think about. Do you ever think about the fact that, because I don't know if there could be another stunning Steve to Stone Cold transformation the way that the wrestling business is currently structured.
When I came out of WCW, a stunning Steve, you know, I tore my tricep, I got fired, and then Paulie picked me up, and he, I told him I couldn't work.
Ha! Yes! Yes!
Water to wine. Dedicated to mine.
Oh, who's the podcast professional here?
God damn it. You got me. Man got me at my own game. Calling me out. 316 Gimmick Street. Savage. Ron Funches went savage on me. I owe everybody, anytime some shit like that happens. And while we were talking, I was just sitting like, where's my phone? Where's my phone? I actually answered that call. Someone's trying to tell me. Yeah, it's right here on your desk. I was like, where's my phone? I hope it don't start ringing, because when yours went off, I was like, well, where's mine at?
Mm-hmm.
So I think of, you know, when I got fired, I went to see Paulie. I worked for ECW. I was just cutting promos. And again, I won't tell my life story to all my people that have heard me tell me my story, but this is Ron Funches asked me, so I'm going to answer his fucking questions. When I got there and I tried the Ringmaster gimmick, and then I saw, you know, because we were doing those Raws that I just told you about, one live, one post.
Mm-hmm.
And then they finally gave me a little bit of promo time, and they started editing my lines. And that's when I didn't even know Vince, but we was walking across the parking lot in Worcester or Lomas, and I was fixed to go do a taping. And I had to ask the man the question. And it took a lot of nerve to ask Vince McMahon, you know, the head honcho. Hey, man, I said, Vince, you got a second? I got to ask you something. He goes, well, sure, pal. And I said, hey, man, I noticed when I'm watching TV, man, you're editing out a lot of lines I'm saying. And he goes, I wonder why that is. He goes, well, quite frankly, Steve, you're popping the guys in the truck, you know, the production truck, meaning pop them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, fuck, if you can pop the guys in the truck, you can pop the world, because they've seen and heard everything, right?
Yeah.
And I told him right then and there, I said, Vince, I said, you got guys here 6'10", 7 feet, 300, 320 pounds. I said, man, I said, I got 6'2", 250, black trunks, black boots, bald head and a goatee. I said, if you take my personality from me, I cannot compete. But if you give me my personality, I said, I can compete with anybody you got. And he said, okay, Steve. That's when he lifted the reins off of me, and that's when we started flying. And then I started busting out the middle fingers. And that got over. Remember, at the time, Diamond Dallas Page was doing a diamond cutter, and everybody was throwing up the symbol mm-hmm. with him. I was doing the middle fingers, and that wasn't so PC, even back when it was still the Wild Wild West in the late 90s, right?
Yeah.
So he calls me aside. This time I was starting to get a little bit of leverage, right? And when you get a little bit of leverage, things start changing. Or you start drawing money, things start changing.
Absolutely.
Your voice is a little bit louder and heard a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And he goes, Steve, I was just wondering, you know, you start doing that middle finger thing, and I was just wondering, is there another symbol that you can do that everybody can do? And I just looked at it without no hesitation. I said, nope. And that's the way it was. And so to answer your question, I can just say that When I got into wrestling, I had no plan B. And finally, when I got called up, I'd got two or three offers to go to WWF before I went. I just knew they had no plans for me. They didn't see star in me. I was just going to be a mechanic. Mm-hmm. You know, guy jerking a curtain, having a match, you know, for the superstars to follow me, you know, whatever, the main event. Mm-hmm. And after doing that for a little while, you know, I knew that, you know, there was no plan B. I was climbing up a tree, and I wasn't afraid to go out on a limb, and I wasn't afraid to push the envelope because I didn't have no backup plan. I was going for it because if you was going to line up everybody against the wall, and I wasn't going to be the biggest guy, the best looking, the smartest, you know, whatever, but my competitive, who I am, that was the way that I could, you know, like the way you deliver your humor, that me being me turned up to that 11 we was talking about a while ago. That was me getting a chance to be me. So I just let that fly. And I just think in today's system, to answer your question, I just think because of all the corporate money, because of all the, everything's so political these days, unfortunately, I just think that the WWE superstars, for the most part, are having to walk on eggshells. And so imagine, you know, like if you had to walk on eggshells and just didn't cover, you know, anything that you felt was going to make someone uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I asked Bill Burr one time. I said, Bill, you know, because Bill will push the envelope a little bit.
Oh,
I
mean, yeah.
Man, we went to, Bill was on my podcast, and man, we went to his show in Manhattan Beach, my wife and I. And man, I was sitting at my damn table. I thought my head was going to explode because I'm laughing so goddamn hard. And then on a podcast, I said, Bill, I said, sometimes you got to push the envelope, you know? I said, where do you draw the line? And he goes, Steve, when people pay a ticket to see me, they know what they're getting, they know what they're signing in for or signing up for, so they expect it. And I'm like, okay, you're going to watch me. This, you know what you're signing up for. But my mother told me, she said, Steve, if I saw what you're doing now back when you were a kid, I wouldn't let you watch you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, but anyway, that's a whole other story for another day. But, yeah, it's just a different structure. And did you get a chance to watch TLC last night?
I did.
What did you think?
That was pretty good. It was it's difficult for me right now because I haven't been watching any Raws or SmackDowns, so I don't know what the stories were. But the overall event, I thought the main event was amazing. I loved the I was just a big fan of Charlotte and Becky and Asuka, so there's no way you could go wrong there. I thought it was really good as far as beating my expectations because I went in there being, I think right now it's like, it's a weird time because no Roman, Braun's hurt. It's just like a big reloading time. And so I haven't really been paying that much attention to it. I've been too busy flying around and I'm watching enough New Japan to keep me interested there and excited there. So I don't, you know.
I thought the women did an outstanding job in a TLC match, and I'm not a fan of TLC pay-per-views in general because
me neither.
It's, you know, it's just like save that match or whatever it is for the very end, and the rest of them will be all normal wrestling matches.
Yeah.
Because I'd be like, if Jim Jeffries was going to head a card, and it's all Satanism or you know Antichrist, you know, then the whole rest of the card, the lead up to him, has got to be something different. They can't be doing the same shit. I mean, that's maybe a bad analogy, but
no, I think it exactly nailed it. And also, it's harder now to watch, like, particularly, like,
God damn it! Fuck!
Like, chair matches, as a guy who's been watching wrestling a long time, are difficult to watch because it's like, how many ways can I watch you wait to perfectly line up a chair shot with their back? You know? It's like, I can't realistically watch that and suspend my disbelief, but I don't want you to just hit people unprotected in the head anymore. But so I just don't feel like there's a need for them. But I'm always, I mean, it was, I loved it.
I'm looking to see what's gonna happen now because my girl Becky, big attitude, she's coming on strong.
Oh,
she got her swagger back, she got the belt, and all of a sudden, here comes Ronda, pushes the ladder over, her and Charlotte take the tumble. Asuka, who I love Charlotte, I love all three of those women. I mean, because they're badass competitors in their own rights. And I love the aggressiveness of Asuka, especially when she first came in and that first run she had with the belt was about damn 2.5 years. Of course, you know, Charlotte is the daughter of the greatest professional wrestler that ever lived, in my personal opinion. Becky Lynch, you know, just she's the man. And when the man comes to town, she, you know, she's going to take care of business. So I love her swagger, love her gimmick, love her work. And so with Asuka and then when Ronda coming down, I think that was a payback to Charlotte because, you know, with the beat down with that kendo stick. So setting something up for in the future. But the other match I'll talk about was That match with her and Nia Jax, that was a damn good match.
It was a damn good match.
Because it wasn't, man, I didn't know Ronda was so agile. I mean, because she almost climbed up, well, she literally did climb up Nia a couple of times to get those crazy armbar positions. And you know, Nia strong enough to withstand that.
Out,
and they kept putting that in an armbar. So I thought they told a really good story. I thought it was really physical. That was what I liked about the Ronda versus Charlotte match a month or two back, because it was just so physical. Some people said, well, there were some things that looked a little rough. Fucking A. It's supposed to look a little rough.
Exactly.
It ain't supposed to look like ballet. Now, of course, you want some of your shit to be smooth, come off polished and professional. But if it don't look like a roughhouse or an athletic contest... Mm-hmm. Fuck, I watched the goddamn, watching motherfuckers build them tiny houses on TV.
I agree with you. That's one of my small issues with some independent wrestling, is when it's too cute, when it's too much of a synchronized swimming type routine instead of wrestling. And when I don't feel like, if I see a big move hit and you don't go for a pin because you're just waiting for your next thing, it's like, what are we even doing here? I thought you're trying to win. I'm willing to go on this road with you as long as you make me believe that you want to win this match. But if you're just out there being cute to do backflips, I'm not into it. I love it when it looks a little rough, when it looks like a real fight. I don't want anyone getting hurt, but I love it when it looks a little rough. I tweeted about this last night and got a lot of feedback from some people where I wrote that, because I watched that Ronda Nia Max, and it just occurred to me, I was like, I think Ronda Rousey is the best rookie I've ever seen in my life, ever, of anyone. I think she's, as far as like from the day that she signed, which was still less than a year ago, to now being the champ, being on the pay-per-views, being the focal point and not folding is amazing. And I had a bunch of people be like, what about Kurt Angle? What about Kurt Angle? And I was like, yeah, you're talking about Kurt Angle's whole career. Kurt Angle's first year, he was still down there training. He was still out there hanging out. And he has the skills, but he didn't have the personality. You know, he had to develop that to see Ronda. And of course, Ronda has a leg up as far as being already famous. But to me, that's also a bigger chance for you to fail, because people want you to fail because they don't think you're going to be. I came in being like, she's going to suck. And, but you know, I learned more. I'm like, oh, she's actually a big fan. She's for real. She's down at PWG. She's into wrestling. So I wanted her to be successful, but I didn't think she would. And I watched the first match and I was like, this is where she was meant to, more than UFC, this is where she belongs. This is what she, her facial expressions, everything she does for a person 1 year in is amazing.
It is amazing, because when she first came in, obviously, and she's still very green, but when she first came in, her mic skills and just the way she would hold the mic away from her or turn her head over here and the mic's still over here, just things like that, just trying to get a point across. And then you just wondered how she would do. And then, you know, they had a great match at WrestleMania 34, 33, whatever the fuck it was, with Kurt Angle, Triple H, and Stephanie. And, of course, the referee's in there, too. So, I mean, there was protective mechanisms in her, because she's working with so much years of talent, and they made her shine like a diamond. And so she pulled that off. And she had a badass match with Charlotte, you know, a month or two ago. And in this match, what I loved about working with her and Nia did, it was just rough and tumble. She's not really a high spot gal, and neither is Nia, but it was physical. It was a contest. And going into the finish of the match, there were several outstanding false finishes. And that was one of the things that Ronda hadn't really been employing, was those close false finishes, kicking out at 2 3/4. And that's what was in this match. I was like, man, kudos.
Yeah.
Shout out to both those girls.
Yeah.
Gals,
she hit that cross body block from the ring to the floor.
And that takes guts. And that, first of all, I know how tough Ronda is, you know, because of her career in judo and MMA. But all of a sudden, when you just get up there and you can kind of read her lips, she's going, goddamn, fuck this, or whatever you say. So she's talking herself into it. And you love to see someone just kind of like, hey, man, because I was going to tell one of my stories. But just to get up there and do that cross body, okay, I'll never forget when I was laying there on the table in Madison Square Garden, and Taker was going to drop that leg off the top, and I just got knocked out previously in the match, and I'm laying there on the table looking up at him. I'm thinking, man, I don't know if this big motherfucker Parker's going to jump off on me. And, you know, sure enough, here he comes. And bam. But when you get up there, she kind of said, oh, man, this is crazy. Remember when Chevy Chase was going to jump in a swimming pool with what's his name back in the vacation? It's crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's always kind of like one of those moments. But, yeah, she got up there, and it humanizes her.
Yeah.
Because you know she's a badass chick, but all of a sudden, man, she's in a world that she's immersed herself in, and she's a natural, to your point, and I'd say one of the best rookies of all time, but still, she's very green, and when she gets those humanizing moments, it's like, yeah, man, she smiles, she's beautiful, she's tougher than nails,
yeah.
And she's really learning how to work a crowd.
She's everything that you would want in a wrestler. She's got personality, she's got skills, she looks great, she's beautiful. So what else do you want? So I didn't get people, you know, sometimes, you know how the internet is. They were like, shut up. And I was like, what about Goldberg? And I was like, I'll go, do you want to watch one of Goldberg's first year matches one-on-one? I don't.
Yeah, he was running through people like a hot knife through butter. But hey.
But yeah, put him out there. How long was that match last night with Ronda and I? At least 10, 12 minutes, right? I would not want to see that from Goldberg first year. And I love, and no disrespect to Goldberg.
Oh, yeah, Goldberg's a great friend of mine. But, I mean, yeah, man, those first few matches are his. But, you know, and at that time, that was all they needed out of him. And it's like, okay, Bill, I mean, Jesus Christ, he's one of the strongest, most explosive guys in the history of the business. He's crushing people. He's jackhammering them. He's spearing them. It's like, all of a sudden, now you want him to put on a 15-minute scientific clinic? No.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Let him do what he does.
That's not what the people want to see. They're enjoying him beat the fuck out of someone in a minute flat.
Yeah.
So do that.
Yeah.
But now, you know, the way it is, you know, I mean, for her to go out there and put in that time, I remember first time one of my stories was just came into the territory. I'd been in a business for about 2 months, started working full time. Dutch Mantell is booking. We're working a spot show in Lebanon, Tennessee. And Dutch says, want you guys to go out there and just give us about 8 or 10 minutes and catch something quick on him. I'm the rookie, right? I'm thinking, man, what the fuck are we going to do for 8 minutes? I mean, so for Nia and Ron to go out there and do that 10, 12, 13, whatever it was, I didn't time it.
Yeah.
But to put in that kind of time with those false finishes and that work and the physicality of it and not high spot oriented, which I loved because I love a high spot, but the fact these two chicks are trying to beat each other up. So anyway, I'll shut the fuck up about pro wrestling. We got Giggle Fit coming out on January 4th. What else we got to look forward to, and where can people find you on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, your website, your home address, your telephone number?
Find me in the valley, walking around Whole Foods.
Remember when Mitch Hedberg said, you know, I think 4 people saw me on Letterman, but more people have seen me from the store. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a classic. That's one of my favorites. Twitter at Ron Funches. I have my podcast, Getting Better. The special January 4th, 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on Comedy Central. They'll have it on their website, and you can get it on iTunes as well. But please watch it or DVR it because it is not streaming. And I need you to help me prove to these people that I am a commodity. So.
Dude, you've already proven your commodity. I got one last question for you. You ever see that movie, I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker?
Yeah.
Well, my question for you is, you can take the window, you can take the stairs.
I'll take the stairs.
Ron Funches, check it out, man. Giggle Fit, January 4th. Watch it. And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so. Thank you, man.
No, thank you.
All right, let's give a shout out to my main man, Diamond Dallas Page, and DDP Yoga. DDP Yoga has transformed the lives of legends such as Mick Foley and Chris Jericho, who's still going strong at 47, as well as helping rehab injuries for WWE superstars like Bobby Fish, Drew McIntyre, and AJ Styles. DDP Yoga can work for all ages, all weights, all fitness levels, and by using the DDP Yoga app each week, I can tell you there's a ton in there to keep you on track. DDP himself is on the app to help keep you focused on your your goals and maps out the workouts that you can do. The best part is how easy it makes keeping track of everything. All you got to do is just connect a Bluetooth heart rate monitor and it logs all your workout data and calories burned. Just for listeners of the Steve Austin Show and just in time for the holiday season, DDPY is offering its biggest discount ever with 30% off of DDPY workouts and the DDP Yoga Now app. With these savings, there is no excuse for you not to start the new year off right. And remember, this offer is only available at ddpyoga.com/Austin. And check this out, DDP's upcoming book, Positively Unstoppable, The Art of Owning It, is now available for pre-order. Filled with lessons from Paige's life that share his own struggle to find his calling, overcoming one obstacle after another, Positively Unstoppable is a Bible for anyone who needs to be re-inspired to follow their dreams and take real action towards the things that matter most to them. Positively Unstoppable will be released January 15, 2019, and is available for pre-order anywhere books are sold. And while we're giving shout-outs, let's give big ups to TrueCar. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date. Or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch your car's details pop up. Then just answer a few questions. Navigation, moonroof, high mileage. Now you'll know how much it's going to cost you so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer not available in all areas. All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. But before I do that, I want to thank my guests, stand-up comedian, writer, actor, a super talented guy and a very funny guy and a huge wrestling fan. I had an awesome time visiting with him here at 316 Gimmick Street, Ron Funches. Make sure you tune in and check out his brand new comedy special. It's called Giggle Fit on Comedy Central, January 4th, 11 Eastern, 10 Central. Make sure you check this shit out. Set your DVR, do what you got to do, watch it live and in living color when it plays, and that's the bottom line, because I said so. Probably going to be some of the funniest shit you're going to see as we head into 2019. I want to say thank you very much to my guest, Ron Funches, for coming by. I'm looking forward to watching Giggle Fit on January 4th, 11 Eastern, 10 Central on Comedy Central. I got it fucking right. On with the plugs. If you're thirsty, since it's the Christmas season, buy a brother or sister a goddamn Broken Skull IPA and send it to their ass. You can find it at El Segundo Brewing Company or Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. And if you ain't in Cali, you might be shit out of luck. And if you're in a Christmas spirit and you want to give a motherfucker a pocket knife, I got two of those sumbitches. The Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife or the Cold Steel Working Man's Knife. Great stocking stuffers, great main event presents, whatever. Be in the giving spirit. Head over to my Amazon store. They got the best prices on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of Steve Austin Show, especially BetOnline.ag, DDP Yoga, TrueCar, and Geico. That's how I'm able to do this motherfucker for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. And if you need more info on my sponsors, check out the show description to this episode for details. Folks, I am on social media, Twitter and Instagram at Steve Austin BSR. And until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of Steve Austin Unleashed every Thursday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Before we ride off, a quick message from our friends at Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at geico.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today.